Hello everyone, this is Adrian here and welcome back to another episode of the Adrian Tan Show. The future of work is here today and it's digital, it's distributed. And today we are diving into the heart of this revolution with a visionary leader who's forging a new path, Marcelo Labrede, the co-founder of Remote, a unicorn startup simplifying global employment that was started in 2019. And in 2023, Remote, under his leadership, achieved unicorn status by raising $150 million, becoming Portugal's fifth unicorn startup. This milestone reflects his strategic leadership and the team's dedication to revolutionizing the way companies hire, pay, and manage their global teams. Marcelo was born and raised in a small village in northern Portugal and, after completing college, moved to Lisbon in 2010 to explore better opportunity. Bring along with him early interest in gadgets and technology, which was highly influenced by his grandfather, who was a trained electrician. Now, what makes this story compelling is really his ability to turn challenges into opportunities. And most interestingly, the company was started in 2019. This was way before COVID. So I'm really curious to find out where he bought his crystal ball. And of course, Marcelo in this conversation will help us to share his unique perspective on remote work revolution and the incredible potential it holds for businesses, employees, and the global economy. Welcome to the show, Marcelo.
Thanks. It's great being here. Thanks for having me.
So let's move the time a little back to discuss about the transition from you were working, you had a job doing engineering, and you then moved into co-founding a startup, which is challenging, scary for some. What motivated you to take the leap? And how do you think your engineering background may have influenced the way you approach entrepreneurship?
Yeah, that's a great question. I always... The reason why, so my co-founder and I, we've been friends for 12 years. We met way before remote was a thing. And it really, the one thing that got us, you know, close and somehow clicked between the two of us was, you know, our view upon the things that we like to use and like to do. Where, you know, a lot of people will just either suffer through professions or careers or things that you got to do on a day-to-day basis. And I think early it was almost like a Larry David kind of a thing where, you know, why should you suffer through some things, right? You know, like, why should you have a career that you don't love if there's a world of opportunities out there? Of course, there's one theme that always answered that question, which was, well, because I really, for one, I need to eat. And in this world, you still need to have money to be able to afford food in most countries. But in order to get the best job, you know, the job that fits me the best, probably I would not be able to find it locally. I would probably be able, I have to, you know, travel across the world to find it and, you know, find the company and then convince them to hire me and then stay there and work with them. And that actually was an initial idea that we had in 2012. And we started this idea, maybe, you know, we wanted to think about how could we, you know, grab great people and great companies and help them get together. And we started to do a few side projects together, but it was like mostly for fun. We tried to build our own startup at the time. We knew very little. We had no money, and the little that we had ran out in like half a year as we started to try to do something. Across the years, as we found other jobs and opportunities, we always had this theme that continued alongside our journey, which was, you know, we wanted to build things, and we also were very passionate about how we use our time on a day-to-day basis and how you dedicate the precious existence that is, you know, the uniqueness of everyone's lives to, you know, doing certain things. And so doing the things you love should come as a priority and should be able to come as a priority, which unfortunately is not the case. And it, even though we made tremendous progress, but today is still not the case. And so after many years of exploring things, doing things, side projects, as we continue with our careers, we finally got to a point where we knew enough. We had a significant network of people that could back us up, and we had a good story or compelling story to tell as well. And that was it. You know, my wife was 5 months pregnant at the time. Yob had a 6 month old daughter, I believe, at the time, or something like that. And it's never a good time. It never is. Doesn't matter if you don't have kids or if you have 10, it is never a good time. You know, you're going to leave a very comfortable job with a lot of stability and, you know, prospect to jump into the unknown. But that was also the impetus of what got us going. It's like, you will never have the perfect thing until you craft it, because other people will not do it for you. So that was it.
And perhaps having kids would be the Hail Mary moment where you really have to go all out to make it work, because there's no option B, there's no plan B for you. You mentioned earlier on one of the key motivation factor for you was some of the challenges you had in your early career, which you felt, you know, you're just not fitting in here and there. I personally have somewhat similar experience. I started my first business in 2004 because I kept getting laid off. I kept getting fired from jobs after jobs. Different reason, different podcasts. Today's on you. What were some of the earlier challenges you had in your career that you felt, I just got to get out?
I can tell you the very, very first one. I remember, so my grandfather, he gave me this super small, tiny radio. And I remember, you know, my grandfather was like all gadgety and very nerdy. And reminds you that, you know, I came from a very small village where I don't think, honestly, anyone else had a computer. But my grandfather at the time had a Spectrum. That's what we called it, computer. And he gave me that radio. I think he managed to, one of his friends who was a truck driver, you know, came from somewhere in Europe and bought him that. And so he gave that to me. And on that day, it was very interesting. I was so excited. I had a portable, super small radio, like these ear plugs, and it was amazing. And no one had that, but all of a sudden I could hear everything on the go. And no one, you know, I think I was like 9, 10. And I can show you this. This actually, this plate here is the reason why this all started. This is actually a copy of the first picture, the last picture that Voyager took coming out of the solar system. Mm. And I remember on the radio, someone saying, talking about Voyager. And Voyager was this tiny spaceship that we launched into space. And it, you know, many, many years before I was born, I believe. And so all of a sudden I'm like hearing this and I was like, this is amazing. This thing is traveling through space on its own, reporting back all these things. And then it has a disc and whatnot. And then I looked it up. I remember this science book that I got in science class, and it was super into, you know, Voyager and this thing that is alone in the space discovering on its own. And I remember I want to be, I don't know, my parents or my grandfather. And I said, I want to be an astronaut. This is what I want to do. And they laughed and they said, you can't, you really can't be an astronaut. And I was very sad. I was like, why can't I be an astronaut? And they said, because Portugal doesn't have an astronaut program. And for a split second, I almost wished that it was because I was dumb. And it was because maybe I didn't went to the right school, or, you know, that maybe I was not wealthy enough to attend one of those schools. No, because I was Portuguese and Portugal doesn't have an astronaut program. So immediately what people assume is, like, well, then you can do it. And that was the thing that really hit me super, super early. And I think I only realized that many years later, even after starting remote, I only realized that profoundly marked me in a way that, you know, maybe I would have been, I don't believe in ifs, but I certainly would be super passionate about this. And it is the kind of thing that I wish upon others. If you have a true passion about something, it's worth much more than anyone being forced into learning or doing something, because you're going to be there like heart and spirit, day in, day out, because you love it. And you're going to deliver so much more to humanity and to yourself. And that was really like my emotional impetus for remote, is that, you know, my opportunity and my talent did not meet because I was not in a place that allowed me to have that opportunity. And I think that personally, it was my thing. And then, of course, professionally, you know, before starting remote, I was a CTO and VP of engineering a few times. In my career, I always found this tremendous barrier into either I wanted to hire someone for a role, and I struggled a lot, and I worked for really cool companies in Portugal, but you know, Portugal is for a small pot. And so either you convince people to move in, and also you can't pay them salaries of like London, US, even Spain. So you have to like sell it as like a sunny country with great food and great people, healthy and safety. And you have to try all that just to get a shot in hiring good, you know, people with training, with expertise. And on the other hand, from a professional standpoint, from an IC individual contributor standpoint, there were, when I started to look for work after coming out of college, there weren't great product companies, if any, in Portugal. And even companies like Google, Microsoft, they were mostly sales offices in the country. And so those two things professionally were the thing that moved me. And of course, personally and professionally, eventually meet, and this urge to start this company with my best friend and now co-founder, Yob, came to life.
Awesome. And of course, remote came about, as I mentioned earlier on, a few years before COVID. So the timeliness is really, really interesting, because over COVID, companies like remote is sprouting left, right, center, but you guys actually have the foresight to start it way earlier, as you shared before. You personally experienced it as problem statement, which resulted in, okay, maybe something like this. But what was the key realization? I'm very certain it did not just came about from a single instance. Were there other moments that continued to add on, to pile up, and really trigger the realization that, okay, no one can solve this, probably we can do a better job?
Yes. My co-founder worked at a great company called GitLab, and they are also a distributed organization all across the world. And they always also struggled to manage, you know, a fully distributed team, not because of lack of know-how, but because of how complex and how multidimensional it actually is. And as we were discussing, there was a point in time where we were both aligned into we should build our own stuff and, you know, put our money where our mouth is. But then we asked ourselves, but what is it? Like, what is significantly strong and meaningful that we're going to give up our great and comfortable careers to do this? We debated for a couple of days, no more than that. We quickly came to the point where we were both very passionate about this space, how we were going to meet talent and opportunity and allow, you know, people from take use and make use of this as, you know, if I want to work for a company, I should just be able to do so no matter where I am, and companies to be able to manage global workforces. But how, you know, and then we start to distill this idea. So how do you do it in practice? Well, you have to find people, you have to be able to pay them, and you have to be able to legally and compliantly have a relationship with them. No matter if they're an employee, they're a contractor, if you own the legal entity or not, it's quite a matrix, and with so many different levels. And then we started to talk to people about it. Some incumbents, companies that were in the space for decades already. And we were a bit shameless on that. We just reached out and said, hey, I'd like to think about how you're doing this and discuss, you know, what are your thoughts? And we realized that the market was very, very outdated. So we had stumbled upon an area that had tremendous bad customer satisfaction levels and had barely any product. And it was mostly manual, clunky, and almost underground. Not underground because it's a legal common thing, but it was mostly like an underused ability to do something. And we realized, well, why is that the case? And then we realized, of course, after digging and talking to a few companies, legal counsel and whatnot, that it was really hard. No one was doing it because it was super hard. We were both crazy enough to do so. And then so we realized that this is it. Like, this is the one thing that is like hard enough, crazy enough, but also rewarding enough for us to do. And that was it. Then, of course, you know, we started talking to people, but we quickly found how to execute it and get going.
Of course, right now, if anyone were to do a Google search on remote, they will be able to see the unicorn that remote is right now, the billion-dollar business that you have built up. I'm interested to go back to year one. In fact, yep. Month one. Because yep. There's so much survivor bias in the market, right? Everyone's saying, oh, Marcelo is a unicorn. I'm going to be a unicorn. I'm going to jump into entrepreneurship. But we don't really talk a lot about the struggles. Not that it's a bad thing, but the struggles really is the foundation to where you are today. Bring us back to the first month. How was it like? We're operating out of a living room. How many people do you have? What are some of the constant things going through your head on a day-to-day basis? What is making you lose sleep every day?
A lot. So usually when I tell the first year story of remote, people sort of cringe at my life. But I'll give you an abridged version. So as I told you, we started this company. My wife was 5 months pregnant. And so we started this company in January. Soon after, I think February, during the ultrasound scans, we discovered that my kid had club feet. And so immediately we had to go through exams and all kinds of crazy stuff to figure out if it was just club feet or other genetic diseases that could be affecting the baby. Meanwhile, remote, we were two. And we were hiring two people. So these two people joined mid-February as well. And I was going through, you know, now we're going to build this company. We started talking to investors because people heard that we were building something and they were interested in talking. And, you know, and I have all this happening in my family as well. So my kid was then born in April and he was born at club feet. For those that don't know, so club feet, don't Google it. Some pictures are not great, but essentially, the feet are turned inwards due to it's an idiopathic reason, so no one really knows why. But essentially, it was turned inwards, and the way to treat a baby is the first few days, you start putting casts as if you had a broken foot, and you start to rotate the feet outward. And eventually, you change it every week, and you do surgery, so on and so forth. And so for the first 6 months of his life, that was it. Now, this is a newborn. This means that they barely sleep because they're always crying. So I had a sleepless baby at home. I was also sleepless. My wife was also sleepless. But remote started to pick up. We had a lot of people interested in what we were doing. And I found myself at some point, you know, my kid would do like 30-minute naps, even at night, and then would be awake for like 40 minutes. And I found myself having to like this, I don't know, weird sleeping schedule. I would sleep like 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours at a time while having to work. And because, you know, no one else would do my job. I was an engineer. I was CTO. But, you know, it's CTO in a company of like 3-4 people is just a fancy title for someone that does everything technical. And so I remember everyone knows about this story, but I bought a few Nike tracksuits. Why? Because I had to go from like work, run to make dinner and lunch and whatnot, prepare anything for the baby and my wife, and take care of the house, the laundry and all that. Also, you know, take care of the baby for a bit while my wife, you know, would rest a bit, and then hand off the baby, go back to work, maybe sleep a bit. And I would not have time to like put on proper clothing, take care of myself. And so I just found these super nice, comfortable Nike tracksuits that would allow me to either walk around with it with my son or just take a quick nap, or just sit in front of a computer and do a few calls, and I would not look that bad. So I remember that these tracksuits followed me for like a year and a half because they were so easy for me to handle, you know, getting into clothes and out, and I was, you know, easy to wash and care for. And this was pre-pandemic. So this is a year pre-pandemic. And then by, you know, by the time that I was getting things almost sorted, you know, my kid came out of casts and now into braces, and then back to the pandemic hit. Right. So this was the first year of remote where I, you know, and then of course the company, we also raised some money and we start to hire people. So I think we ended the year with like 50 people, I believe, or so, give or take. And so we went into the pandemic with 50 people, and then we left with like a few hundred, maybe 400, 600 people 2 years later. But the first year was this. In my mind, it feels like this big, blurred out, massive day. But, you know, that was it.
Was remote the first choice for the name? I'm asking because as I get to see a lot more other similar competition coming to the market,
yep,
I don't really get a sense of what they do just by looking at the name. Because probably they're trying to play the domain game. If they just can't get a domain, they just switch things up. But when I first got to hear about remote, I'm like, oh, I know what you guys do. But remote.com 2019, I think it's still going to be quite a challenge to get a domain. I'm quite interested in all this domain stuff. So how was that experience in trying to get the domain and, of course, to make everything work for you?
So I remember Ben and I were having a conversation about what are we going to call it? It's the worst discussion you're going to have about anything. What are you going to call something, right? It's either a project or a company or it's a product. What are you going to call it? And because we wanted to do something in this space, Yop said, well, remote would be awesome, but it's taken. He was shameless enough to reach out to the founders. And he said, hey, I see you have remote.com. Maybe we could chat. And that was it. And so I remember they had a conversation. I was working and Yop managed to have, they were in the US, so they had a different schedule, time zones, and I was working. I couldn't attend the call. And Yop had a call with them and they were super nice. They, you know, the people that eventually became angel investors at Remote, but they had, essentially they had moved on to another project. They had built previous remote.com and they had moved on to another project. And so we came to a very interesting arrangement and we said, look, this would make total sense for our idea. This, we would be super aligned. And we talked about it. They were also super aligned with what we wanted to do. And they were super cool, super friendly. And we remain friends till today. But it was half, 50% shameless from my co-founder reaching out and saying, hey, can we have this? And 50% of great people on their side that understood what we wanted to do and followed up the same trail of thought.
That's a great story. So looking at where Remote is today, and of course, for you to look backwards from day one until right now, what do you think are some of the key strategies and decisions that propelled Remote to what it is today? And of course, some of the challenges along the way, you mentioned some of the earlier years. What about some that is a bit more recent, especially when I'm seeing so many competitions sprouting out? Everyone is a copycat version of Remote. The differentiation gets very diluted and it seemingly becomes a race to the bottom. So how do you look at differentiation and what are some of the key things potential customers would have to pay attention to in order to make sure they pick the right one?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the way you win is if you have a great product and an excellent service, period. Always have a problem because they take a snapshot of what they see. But they can't really take a snapshot of what they don't see. They can make assumptions, but that is it. Now, what really sets us apart, and always did, we didn't come at this because we woke up one day and we thought we're going to get rich by selling this. We wanted to solve a really big-ass problem, and that problem is still unsolved. We are doing strides at it, yes. But the real issue is unsolved. And I believe that that is what the competition actually missed, is that, you can really make a lot of money. Absolutely. And, you know, we're also making a lot of money, which is good for everyone. But truth to the matter is, how do you do it? We wanted to create an experience both for the people being paid, employees, contractors, you name it, but for the employer as well. No matter what kind of relationship you have, and how do you really foster the future of work? In the future of work, we start with EOR, right? The employer of record, the ability for a company in one country to hire someone in another country without having a setup there, like a bridge for employment. That was just the very beginning of this. You know, it is the first step into the future of work, because you have many forms of employment and engagement with different people. More so than that, the future of work goes through something that is perceived sometimes directly or indirectly as a distributed way of work. It doesn't really mean that you are a remote worker, but it means that companies today are global by nature, by default. No one, even local coffee places, when they're created, they immediately have a website. It means that they're accessible throughout the whole world. They will either do business or take investment from people around the world. And that was not as prevalent, but was a very hard, very big trend. And that's what we picked up on. So in order to really unlock the future of work, you can build a big platform like we did. You know, today, remote is more than just one product, it's many. It's a global HR platform, what I like to call a backbone, HR backbone of companies. But the way this is built is not just by collating things together or grabbing things out of the shelf that already exist, out of companies that already existed, and, you know, stitching them together and try to make it under a big umbrella. No, because that already existed 5 years ago when we were created. The biggest difference is that when you take apart, what do you think it means to run payroll, to run payments, to do compliance, to talk to governments, right? Because when you take the time to take that all apart, and then you realize, what are you really building? Because, you know, payroll exists in the same format for hundreds of years. My grandparents, great-grandparents would get paid with like money in an envelope with a few, you know, a bit of math on the back of it. That was payroll. It is slightly different. The paper is not paper, it's PDF, but it's just slightly more involved, but it's exactly the same. And so when we start to apply these principles of, let's question the status quo, let's take it apart, understand the important pieces, what is compliance, what is legal, what is required, what can be different and what can't, then we created something very interesting and unique, which is today we can onboard people in our platform in hours. All of our competition still takes weeks to do so. And it's not that you can build a big business on that. You can. They did. But they missed the point, right? The point is that you can do things. You can embrace it and step into the future of work using the tools that the future of work give you. Being able to work from anywhere, being paid anywhere, and being able to jump from one job to another that suits you better and carry your information with you. And all at the same time, you can do it super easy. If you're an employer, you want to hire someone fast and you want to make sure that someone's taxes, someone's legal and obligations and compliance are being met. And this is the problem that some of the companies that try to copycat this missed. And they're heavily having heavy issues today, because they shortcutted tax considerations in many countries, shortcutted compliance in many countries. And, you know, they jerry-rigged solutions together to offer something. And, okay, look, we all do what we got to do, which is fine. But at some point, you can't play around with certain things. And if you really understand what the future of work is and what it should be, then that is the path to go. And unfortunately, there is no shortcut. There is no playbook that is going to tell you how do you get there faster. No, the future of work is being defined not just by the offer, but the need of people that today have access to tremendously fast internet, super powerful computers, and knowledge that can traverse the world in a split second. And so in order to evolve that, you have to really rebuild from scratch the tech, but also work with local entities, governments, regional entities that will help you, and you help them understand what they got to do, which we do very often, where we work with several governments, European Union, where we sit down and discuss, look, what is the future of work about? Is it about opportunity? Is it about diversity? It's about distribution. How do you process employment in this world? What changes? What stays the same? What is the different paradigm? So it's a different game, I would have to say. There will always be competition. I think competition is a good thing because it keeps you sharp. It keeps you moving. But I always say this, that, you know, our biggest competition is our own shadow and not any other brand or name.
That's a good one. And in consideration of what you're trying to promote here, as a company, how distributed is remote? How many percent of your people are completely distributed?
100%. Today, we're 1,500 people across the world. All, you know, we don't have an office anywhere. Or some people do have a preferred co-working space, and we have a stipend for that. But that is the extent that we have it. Right? Of course, in some countries, you do have to have a physical representation of the company in a place, but people are not obligated to attend that frequently. And so the company is 100% distributed. No limitations. Typically, sometimes the only restriction we do is if we are looking for someone that needs to fundamentally be in either physically on a location because of time zone or willing to work in that time zone.
You must have read about recently, not so recently, maybe over the past 1 year, 1.5 year, about companies mandating their employees to come back.
Yeah.
The Apple saga. Salesforce, I think, if I'm not wrong. Locally, where I am in Singapore, many companies are also getting their employees back to the office. Interestingly, of course, a year prior, we were talking about resignation. Right now, everyone is just, okay, I'll go back. Why do you think this is happening, especially from the company perspective? Because I have seen many instances where complete distributed workforce, you're not the only one. Automatic, the company behind WordPress, they've been dead since day one. But of course, I also see some commonality. Tech company, somewhat tech company as well. Is this just something that would work for some, not others, which is why RTO became a thing for them? Or are they missing out on certain perspective, which caused them to think, oh no, we still got to return back to office?
Well, so for one, I think to each their own. And there are multiple types of businesses. And I think the key here is the distribution of them. I think there was a big, big mistake when people started to confound what remote work was and remote work during the pandemic times was, right? Because that was when everyone started to learn about, oh my God, working from home is a thing. We can, it's actually doable, but we were living through very different times. Right? We were mandated into working from home. That helped to prove that it was possible. Then it evolved into fully distributed organizations where companies started to think, huh, maybe I can have an office in several countries, or I can hire people in different countries and work with them because it's doable. I'm not just bound to having everyone in the same place. And that evolved, of course, and had a multitude of expressions where you either had, you know, everyone distributed across the world, everyone distributed within a country or within a region, or having an office and only coming to the office like a few days per month, or having multiple offices and you can roam around. The permutations are almost endless. Every company has their own interpretation of distributed work. Now, the most important thing is that this is not culture. This is just a way to work. But it does require processes, as with every company. And a lot of companies that were office-bound and office-based, almost all, realized that, oh, wait, we have no documentation. want to have a process for people to submit expenses or to take time off. Wait, who do I ask about this? Because I don't have anyone next to me. And this became a really, really big problem where people realized that, some things are working. Everyone's working. Everyone actually is working a lot, but we're, smashing heads. And people quickly realized that they were missing some of the most important items, which was, okay, this is not grabbing the way we work in an office and just replicate at home. It's actually different. Like, you need to have a different kind of interactions. You write a lot. You don't just interrupt people, but you can be more productive. But also, if you have less direction, you end up going in a different path. And so communication, documentation, processes, these were things that most companies, even the most successful ones, did not have written down. There was just word of mouth. If you wanted to know how to submit an expense, just ask the person across the room. No one had actually written that down. So this was the first step. And a lot of companies started to race into, okay, what do we do? And a lot of these companies came to us for feedback and ideas and mentoring. And we certainly helped and still do today how to run a distributed organization and not a remote one, distributed, like multiple offices, multiple people across the world. And that evolved into a next step, which was a lot of these companies adapt and they said, well, this is actually cool. We don't really need to go back because the panic moment went out. Like, we now have processes to handle these things. Companies are more effective. People can actually be happier because they're close to their loved ones. They don't really need to travel across the world. And that you can actually bring, the salary you have in a expensive place and move down to a less expensive, higher quality of life. So a lot of these things start to shape our society. And then a second phase came, which was, okay, societies have been pushed to adapt to this. You see companies, countries, cities like San Francisco, New York, London, Lisbon, you name it. And look at this, office spaces that are now empty, massive buildings that are purely empty. I like to roam around cities. I really like this, the way I like to visit. You do that in New York, it will scare you shitless. The amount of offices that are lit up with no single trace of anyone being there for a long time. And so these businesses are still operating. They were not in business, in an office, in a physical, co-located space. This shifted a lot. This started to shift housing, cost of housing, people moving to other countries massively. There's been an exodus of more expensive countries to less expensive countries. But then there's also something nefarious about this, especially for bigger organizations, which is they invested heavily in offices. They turned office life into culture, where you have a kick-ass barista and a nice pickleball court and ping pong tables and candy and all that. And that was it. Companies build massive debt and investment into culture, but that was actually fused into property, into assets. And so now, what do? Are you going to write that off? Millions and millions, if not billions? You're going to just write it off? Wait, on top of that, you also have, you're going to have to hold and spin the whole company in flight because your company does not have the processes, the mentality, the motto, the leadership to realign the ship in flight to this new way of working, which requires a lot of discipline, a lot of thought process, and a lot of dedication. And here's the last piece of the puzzle, which is when all the math is done, and even in the companies that you can say, well, we're going to write it off because we're going to make a lot more for it and we're going to be better off without it. because the company will be more productive. We're going to be able to hire better people across the world, most cost-effective locations, so on and so forth. And people, everyone's going to be happier for it. But then this is last piece, which is, what if the leadership is not aligned? What if the leadership does not want to be distributed? What if these people, to operate, they need people physically around? If for them, the best way to operate and to produce is to actually surrounded by other people, which is actually the representation of most of us. Some people work great remotely. I certainly do. But I know I have a lot of friends that can't. They struggle through it. They will alienate from people. They don't like it. They feel the need to socialize. And so it's unthinkable for them to work remotely because they just personally can't handle it. And it just don't fit well. In the same way that I don't really like to work in an office. It's the same thing. It's just different people with their mindset. And so in companies where the leadership shares this mindset, the company will never be distributed, right? Ever. Even having multiple offices will be a struggle because the mentality of leadership is not aligned. And so it's a multi-phase thing. But the most important thing is that it proved, this whole journey proved, that it's fundamentally possible to run very profitable, very efficient global organizations. No matter the size, the area, if it's tech, if it's not tech, you can do it as long as you have the right structure and the right mentality. It's just a different lane. It's not the same lane. It's not the same cars. It's just a different thing. It's a long answer. Sorry.
Oh, but I love that answer. I think it's almost the equivalent of you don't drive a sports car on a terrain because it just wouldn't work. It's still a road. You can still get to your point, but it's just different and you have to operate differently. And it comes with a different set of instruction manual too, which is a great point that you brought up. I remember when a company here, a country club, when COVID started, they were so ill-equipped because for the longest time, their people has to go back to office, log onto the intranet, if people know what intranet are, to actually apply for leave. So how do I go on leave when I cannot go back to the office because the government isn't allowing us to go back to the office? So that was a huge conundrum for many of them, which of course, eventually everything was sorted. But still, I think to your point, it's really a case of mindset to look at what works for you. I guess it's somewhat like everyone's taste of food, right? Some prefer Italian food, some prefer Japanese food. There's no right or wrong. They're still food. But I guess we just have to look at what appeals to us better. And of course, look in that right direction. You don't, as a company, you don't go out and hire anyone out there if you are so insistent on having an office. Look at people who also enjoy working around people. Then you wouldn't constantly have this fight between employers and employees. Oh, you want to work from home? No, you have to come back to office. And it takes a lot of headspace, which I think is really counterproductive for everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So as we wind up this episode, I just want to also understand your take on where do you see how work will continue to evolve? And also importantly, perhaps you could give us a bit of a teaser. What's next for remote? What's some new thing that is under wraps that you can actually share with us to get some excitement out there?
Quite a lot. Our expansion is both horizontally and vertically, meaning all the products we have today are getting more complex and more structured and a lot more feature rich, but also the amount of products we have. Right. This means that we started out by focusing on just purely distributed organizations. And in 2024, we are going to allow even the local mom and pop shops to use a global platform to manage all their needs. It's almost like a turnkey solution. And so 2024 is going to be a year for big swings, and it's going to be a very interesting year. As far as the future of work goes, we continue very much to be part of that. And that makes me very excited. That's why we also created this company. The fact that we work with a lot of governments across the world to show them what it is to operate in this new world of opportunities, of labor, of international labor, of and ease of travel and migration across the world? And what are the opportunities as well that that brings, not just for the people, but for the local governments as well? What it is to take up new people that come from, you know, one country and move on to another country, and they carry their salary with them, which is 5, 6, 10 times superior, or higher, bigger than the local average salary. How are societies going to adapt to that? How are taxes going to adapt to that? And how will local regulation face this? And so I'm also very excited because we get to work with these regulators across the world and be part of the change, which is, you know, what any founder could ask for. Because if you ask any founder, they're like, I'm on a mission to change the world, and you know, and insert coin phrase after, like, the way people use toilet paper, cool. But it actually happens, right? And so when it actually happens, you're very, very happy because you're aligning the bullshit to the real thing. And so I think that is something that keeps me very, very, very much excited about the future of work, because I see the evolution. I see it, the change, constant change for the better, rather than, you know, a few years ago, it was mostly stale across the world. No, countries were looking inward and very stale in that evolution. Nowadays, it's much, much different. And being part of that discussion is very, very exciting. And I think, you know, people that can benefit from this should be excited too.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And with that, we are coming to the end of this episode. Thanks, Marcelo, for giving us a rundown of your backstory, the history of remote, of course, some of your opinions, as well as your viewpoints, which I'm very certain will benefit a lot of our listeners here. And I almost forgot to mention, you talked about the Nike track suit. I hope someone from Nike is hearing this. It might result in something interesting as well. They have a new target audience, paternal care. So to wrap things up, thank you so much once again for coming onto the show. Lovely speaking with you. And for those people who are interested to learn more about remote, well, they got a kick-ass domain, remote.com. You don't have to play Mind Tetris or Alphabet Scrabble to figure things out. Do check them out and to see how you can hop onto this latest trend, which has actually been proven to work. And as a local small business owner, I'll be happy to be one of the first few to pilot test your new initiative, because I am, well, in some way considered a mom and pop shop. So thank you so much, Marcelo.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.